So there's a lot of issues out there that we've actually been advocating for years that I'm glad she's getting on board, and we look forward to working with her.
Hi there, it's WAMC News Director Ian Pickus, and on this episode of the WAMC News Podcast, we get you ready for the new New York State Legislative Session. Well, the New York State Legislative Session kicked off on Wednesday, and WAMC rolled out the red carpet for a special live hour featuring interviews with legislative leaders, lawmakers, analysts, and reporters from around New York State. It all comes ahead of Governor Kathy Hochul's State of the State address on January 14th. Here's our special broadcast.
A quorum being present, the House will come to order.
Good afternoon and welcome to WAMC's New York State Legislative Session kickoff special. I'm Ian Pickus. It's 4 p.m. and lawmakers convened in Albany today to start their six-month session.
The Honorable Carl E. Hastie to be duly elected Speaker of the New York State Assembly for the years 2025 and 2026.
And I'm Lucas Willard. Members of the State Assembly and Senate will hear Governor Kathy Hochul's plans for their session during Tuesday's State of the State address.
Soon after that comes the Democrats' all-important budget proposal, and agreement with lawmakers on the spending plan is due by April 1st.
The session is currently scheduled to run through June 12th.
Coming up this hour, we'll set the stage for the legislative session by hearing from legislative leaders, some rank-and-file lawmakers, Capitol reporters, and WAMC's bureau chiefs from across New York.
And joining us for the hour here in the studio is longtime Capitol journalist David Lombardo, who hosts the Capitol Press Room on WCNY, which, like WAMC, is a member of the New York Public News Network. Dave, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Lucas. I love that I'm a longtime reporter now. It's a distinction I've always been striving for.
What's the first day of the session like in the Capitol?
Despite the fact that I'm still a longtime journalist, as Lucas said, it still feels like the first day of school. There are people that you haven't seen for 6 months, lobbyists, lawmakers, staff, and it's exciting. There's not a lot of substantive stuff going on today. It's mostly about receptions and pomp and circumstance, but it's still really fun if you're a political nerd.
So what actually did get done today in the early going at the Capitol?
Well, from a formal substantive method, as you're actually talking about, we had, as expected, the speaker was chosen. Carl Hastie, a Bronx Democrat who's led the chamber since 2015, was tapped to run things again over on the Senate side of things. We've got Andrea Stewart Cousins, a Westchester County Democrat who's been in charge of that chamber since 2019, formerly back in the driver's seat. But besides that, not a whole lot, Ian, not a whole lot.
So when will we expect some substance to come through that chamber?
So in terms of the legislative process, things ebb and flow there. We see not much going on for the first couple months, and then things really take off with the budget, which is due, as you said, at the end of March. Then there's a cooling off period where we all pat ourselves on the back for a job well done. And then early June is when the final push is. That's when the session is ending. And these are like, I don't know what you were like in school, but we wait until deadlines here in the legislature. So not until the budget deadline, not until the end of session deadline does a lot of stuff get done. For me, January 21st, that's a big date because that's when the governor is expected to release her budget. And that's a real first substantive take on what's going on in Albany.
Dave, what can you tell us about the makeup of these legislative chambers? And what are politicians talking about after the November election?
So here in New York, the legislative chambers didn't change dramatically. There are still very, 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 pause for emphasis, very large Democratic majorities in both the Assembly and Senate. There are some new faces, but the makeup did not change dramatically. Someone might mention something about not having a supermajority in the Senate, but ignore that. It's not important. And in terms of the hangover, if there is one, from the 2024 elections. I think what you're going to see is this focus that the governor has already made clear on affordability. And to be clear, this is something she's talked about for the last couple of years. The three buzzwords she's thrown around are affordability, opportunity, and public safety. So these are not new things, but the way that she's trying to focus on them, and in this case, what we've seen recently, a focus on a rebate check, a child tax credit, funding for childcare, can be seen as sort of a reaction to the 2024 elections.
And in just a minute, we'll hear from one of the leaders of the New York State Senate. Just before we go to our first guest today, let's stop and pause on why it's not a big deal that Democrats lost the supermajority. Is your point that it's very unlikely that they would override a veto by the governor?
Well, despite the fact that I've been here a very long time, Ian, I have not gotten to see a successful override vote in that time, because one hasn't happened in, I believe, more than 20 years. And I don't think that this Democratic legislature is going to try to show up Governor Kathy Hochul, because that's what it would be seen as in the near future.
And for people who don't pay such close attention to New York state politics, we should say that Democrats are in control of the Assembly, the Senate, and we're halfway through the first full term that Governor Kathy Hochul won after taking over the office from New York Governor Andrew Cuomo. And that gives us a chance now to welcome the hour's first guest, the Deputy Senate Majority Leader. Michael Gianaris from New York's 12th District is joining us on the phone now. Senator, do we have you?
I'm here. Hey, guys. How you doing?
Hi, Senator. You're on with Ian Pickus, Lucas Willard, and David Lombardo. And I'll put the same question to you that I put to Dave, which is, what was the first day of school like for you?
I've been through too many years of school, if that's the case. It's always nice to catch up with colleagues that we haven't seen in a while, of course, because I chair the campaign committee. I see a lot of them through the fall and even over years anyway. But, you know, it's a little bit of seeing, I was noticing some of the
It looks like perhaps we've gone into a tunnel with the Senate Majority Leader. He said he was paying close attention during the elections, of course.
Well, Ian, we spoke with Senator Gianaris on our show after the elections, and we talked a little bit about the priorities that he was trying to focus on. And to hammer home what I mentioned earlier, there was no major deviation that he envisioned for the state legislature moving forward. It was a sense to him that they had maintained large majorities and they had bucked some of the trends nationally. And to him, that meant they had been doing a good job in the majority for the last 6 years and were intending to continue a lot of what they had been focusing on since they took over both houses of the legislature in 2019.
And we have reconnected now with the senator. We're battling some cell issues here. But, Senator, do you hear us now?
I do. Sorry about that. I think I was saying that it's always interesting to come back and see what work OGS has done on the building. I happen to notice that the buttons to open the bathroom doors are now motion activated instead of push buttons. So,
is that a germ-based concern?
You know, it certainly is more sanitary, I'll say that.
So let me follow up with something that Dave was saying about your approach to this session. As a leading Democrat in New York, what message did you take from the November's elections and how you will proceed here in 2025?
Look, everyone's talking about affordability, and that's true enough, but that's a very general term. And I like to dig down more granularly. I mentioned it a little bit in my remarks on the floor today, which is, okay, we can all talk about affordability, but to Republicans, affordability means cutting taxes for the wealthy. That doesn't do anything to help working people afford their lifestyles in our state at all. So when we talk about making life easier and improving the quality of life and the financial standing of the people in our state, for me, that means providing the kind of services that are currently taking a lot of money out of people's family budgets. That's childcare, that's school lunches, that's healthcare. And the more we can do that, the easier it will be for people to live here. Now, the Republicans and the conservatives always talk about the wealthy fleeing the state. That's a canard. What has been happening is that working people who cannot afford to live here anymore are leaving the state in much bigger numbers. Those are the people we need to focus on, and we can do that not by cutting taxes for people who don't need tax cuts, but by providing services for those people, especially in the areas that hit them the hardest. I'm a new father right now, and I can tell you, childcare is a real concern for a lot of New Yorkers, and it's expensive. And the more we can do to help people afford to raise their families here, the better off we'll be.
Senator, this is Lucas Willard. One of Governor Hochul's first items that she previewed for her State of the State address that's coming up later this month is the idea of tax relief checks, inflation rebate checks. What do you think of this idea?
I mean, sure, it's unobjectionable, but my concern with it is that it's a one-off. And you're not really helping people plan a long-term future in this state if you're randomly giving them a $300 or $500 check 1 year, because that's not something they can budget for in the following year or the year after that. I would much rather do something that is long-lasting and has some future to it, some future component. Look, for years we were pushing for universal pre-K, for example, because that's what we were hearing from people. And now that it's in place, certainly in New York City, but in large parts of the state now, it is life-altering for people that can take advantage of that. And I hear that all the time. And so that's the kind of thing we need to focus on, something that is in place, people can rely on, people can count on, people can plan on, and will help take the pressure off of some of the financial hardships that people face. So, yeah, a check is nice, but it doesn't accomplish that.
Senator, if the governor is successful in getting a rebate check worth about $3 billion through the budget, it's only going to be because the legislature signs off on it. And if they do, what do you think that you guys can secure in exchange for that? Have you thought about the horse trading this far in advance?
Well, that's something we're going to discuss with our conference. I'm sure there's a lot of needs people have. But just to return to that point for a second, is that a $3 billion that's going to show up every year? I don't think so. I think the governor's suggesting we had some extra money sitting around, so let's return it to people. And so, like I said, that in a vacuum, that's unobjectionable. But I would much rather have a $3 billion commitment on an ongoing basis to provide childcare for people. And that's what we're not yet seeing. I think that's what the legislature is going to be laser-focused on.
Now, Senator, today some of your Republican colleagues held a press conference to blast the MTA chair, Jano Lieber, over congestion pricing, which took effect just before the start of the session. Now that it's in place, how do you feel about, first of all, the way congestion pricing was rolled out, and secondly, the continued backlash to it?
Well, the rollout was not great, I think, by any objective standard. It was supposed to be in place 6 months prior, and got held up and then got altered to the point where I think its effectiveness is compromised by dropping the amount of the charge. Part of the idea was you need the charge to be significant enough to actually get people out of their cars and onto mass transit. But that being said, something is better than nothing, as this will help deal with the MTA's previous capital budget, which still had a hole in it. Now, of course, we're on to the next one. But, like, the Republicans have press conferences because that's all they can do. The people in this state have rejected their leadership time and again. They are deep in the minority in both houses. They don't have the governorship. They don't have any statewide office. And all they can do is have press conferences. So, you know, they can chatter about what they would like to see happen, but we have the responsibility to actually make decisions, and we take that very seriously.
Senator, you mentioned coming back to the Capitol and seeing all the work that OGS has been doing. We noticed that the courtyard has gotten a major update, but there still seems to be a lot of pigeons in there. And I'm curious whether you are willing to brave the newly opened courtyard prior to the pigeons being fully removed.
Would you have an umbrella handy for me, Dave?
I would loan one to you if we wanted to venture out together on a little...
I'll tell you what, I will do that with you as long as I have head cover. We can go out there. Those pigeons are relentless. And I don't know if they're still doing the laser treatment.
They are still doing the lasers, and they are still back every 3 o'clock, the witching hour, as Raga Justin of the Times Union calls it.
So, Senator,
doesn't seem to be working, though. But anyway, go on.
Ian Pickus again. Just wondering, because we will hear from New York Governor Kathy Hochul on Tuesday with her State of the State address. What would you like to hear from the governor in her speech?
Well, I would like to hear some real, tangible, long-lasting proposals deal with the cost burdens that so many New Yorkers have. We're kind of like keep talking about the same thing because those are the things that are particularly front of mind for so many people right now. I don't want to see gimmicks. I don't want to see one-offs. I want to see real proposals that will be something that will retain working people in the state and attract more people to come here because they know that they can provide for their families in New York State.
She has been releasing some, I'm sorry to interrupt, but our time is short. She's been releasing some of her proposals ahead of the state of the state, and she would like to change the state's mental hygiene law to make it easier to commit people in a mental health crisis. Civil libertarians were quick to poo-poo that idea, but wondering, since public safety is also a key issue among voters, apparently, what do you think of that idea of the governor's?
I think we need to take it seriously. There is clearly a problem with folks who have mental health issues being out in public and not getting the treatment they deserve and presenting a danger to themselves and to others. It's undeniable. And so you know, we have to do something about it that strikes the right balance. Part of the problem is during the pandemic, we're now you know 3-4 years removed from it, but there were a number of bed closures, like elimination of mental health beds because they needed them for general health concerns around the pandemic. I don't think we've ever restored. We did some, but I don't think we've restored ourselves to the numbers we had then. So, yes, we need to create a process that gets people into treatment, even if they choose not to have it if they're in danger. But we also need to make sure we have the facilities in place to provide that treatment when the time comes, or else you're just exacerbating the problem by putting people in an environment that can't provide the services they need.
We've been speaking with the Deputy Senate Majority Leader, Michael Gianaris, who represents New York's 12th District in the New York State Senate. Senator, you've got a long session ahead of you. We thank you so much for taking some time at the outset here to join us on our special program today.
It's my pleasure. I look forward to taking that stroll with Dave.
It's going to be a blast.
And at this point, before we go to our next guest here, let's hear from the Senate Majority Leader, Andrea Stewart-Cousins, who outlines some of her priorities for this session.
Tackling the affordability crisis and getting New Yorkers back on track must be our top priority. But we can't ease up on the fight for our most basic freedoms. We will continue to protect the rights of all New Yorkers and will once again look to bolster reproductive health freedoms. For decades, we were told that Roe v. Wade was settled law and would never change. Well, we know that was a false promise.
And you're listening to special coverage on WAMC. We are kicking off the New York State legislative session today. I'm Ian Pickus, joined by Lucas Willard and our colleague in the New York Public News Network, Dave Lombardo from WCNY's Capitol Press Room. Dave.
Colleague and friend, Ian. I just wanted to add that distinction.
That's important. Another colleague and friend will be joining us right now from the Capitol, and that is WNYC Capitol reporter John Campbell, who has also been taking in the first day of the session as we get ready for this run into June. John, how are you?
I'm great, Ian. How are you?
Well, we're very excited to
hear
your
voice.
He's
a nervous wreck, John. He is a nervous wreck.
We'd like the show to go well, and we made it through the first cell phone issue. So what was the first day of the session like from your perspective, John?
Well, I liked that you you likened it to the first day of school, because that's really how it feels like. I mean, this is the first time since June that the building's been bustling with lawmakers and lobbyists and lawmakers' families. And, you know, it's nice to have some energy in the building.
John, it's Lucas Willard. How many times have you heard the A word today, that being affordability?
Yeah, you didn't have to tell me which A word you were talking about, because we've heard it over and over and over again. It's really the word of the day. Affordability. I mean, that seems to be what the governor had already been pushing for a few weeks now. And now you heard both the Senate leader and the Assembly speaker kind of run with that theme. And I don't think it's coincidence. I mean, voters made very loud and clear in the November elections that the cost of goods and inflation and affordability issues, to use the word myself, are very, very important. So, yeah, you're seeing the Democrats in the legislature and in the governor's office say, yeah, that's what we want to focus on this year. Republicans are reacting with skepticism, as you might expect. But yeah, it seems to be affordability is the word of the day at the Capitol.
John, Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie held a press gaggle this afternoon that I saw you were at. And I was wondering if anything from that stood out to you as newsworthy.
Well, yes and no. I mean, we heard a lot from the speaker did put out in his introductory speech. He did kind of lay the groundwork for some of the proposals that he says he's going to want to see passed this year. Things like universal free school meals across the state. That's already the case in New York City. He said he wants to see that expanded across the state. He said he wants to make income tax. He wants to eliminate the income tax for more low-income New Yorkers. But when we pressed him on that, he said, you know, it's still early. We're still coming up with the details on exactly how that will work. But broad stroke, he put out some proposals that he wants to see the legislature tackle. And that, in terms of news, that seems significant to me.
John, congestion pricing started over the weekend on Sunday over New Jersey's objections. They had tried to seek an injunction, the state of New Jersey, to block it from going into effect. And there are also several Republican and Democratic lawmakers from the Hudson Valley in New York who have raised their objections over congestion pricing. Where does that battle go from here now that the toll is actually in place and revenues are being collected?
Yeah, Lucas, you're right. I mean, it's a $9 base toll if you're a passenger vehicle and you're crossing into Midtown and lower Manhattan below 60th Street. And the state of New Jersey fought to try to block that from taking effect, which is of interest in part because New York has a Democratic governor, Governor Hochul. New Jersey has a Democratic governor, Governor Murphy. And they were really at odds on this issue and remain at odds. So, you know, that toll is in effect. There's some very early anecdotal evidence showing that perhaps there is far less congestion in Manhattan during rush hour, for example. But it's really early to say exactly whether it's having the intended effect. That's something that we're going to need to see over the course of the coming weeks and months and even years. That said, you know, New Jersey vows that they're going to continue fighting against this. You see suburban lawmakers, people like Mike Lawler in the Hudson Valley of Rockland County. He's a Republican who has made this really his issue, that he's fighting against congestion pricing. And when President-elect Trump takes office, you know, that will be very interesting to see whether or not he takes any action to try to stop congestion pricing. He has said he is opposed to it, and this it required Federal Highway Administration approvals. So will he seek to try to rescind those approvals? That's something that we're going to have to keep a close eye on after he takes office.
John, let's say I'm a baseball mad Buffalo Bisons fan, and I want to check the score on opening day on my phone, but I happen to be in eighth grade. Will I be allowed to do that?
That's a very specific question, Mr. Pickus, and thank you for referencing my Buffalo roots and my love of minor league baseball. I appreciate that very much. However, what you're referring to there is whether or not there's going to be a cell phone ban in place in public schools in New York State, and that's something that we're going to wait to hear a little more about from the governor. The governor has said that she's going to have a proposal. We expect to hear about it in the State of the State and maybe see some specifics in her budget address the week after. And that's something that would need legislative approval in all likelihood. Speaker Hastie, the Assembly Speaker, has voiced concern about that. He said, you know, he has a young daughter. He said, you know, if something happens, he wants to know that he can get a hold of her during the day. So, you know, there's going to be some difference of opinion in the legislature and the governor's office on this. And it'll, you know, how they can bridge that gap will determine whether or not it ever takes effect.
WNYC's John Campbell joining us for our special legislative kickoff show. John, I just want to say it's an exciting time in the New York Public News Network because your bureau down at the Capitol now also features our colleague Jimmy Vielkind and Jungyoon Han, all working for New York's public media stations, along with Dave Lombardo and us. So we're excited to go through this session with you.
Can't wait to keep working with WAMC and the other members of the New York Public News Network. We're really looking forward to having this bolstered bureau in the state capitol.
Thanks, John. We'll talk soon. And you're listening to special coverage on WAMC. We're going to go north now to Saratoga Springs, where WAMC's Southern Adirondack Bureau Chief Aaron Shella Levine has been talking to some members of the New York State Assembly about a case that broke late in 2024 at an upstate prison. Aaron, welcome to the program.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Great. So far, so good. So tell us about this situation at the Marcy Correctional Facility and what you've been hearing from lawmakers.
Yeah, so late in December, the death of Robert Brooks, the footage of which was released, again, late in December, he was beaten by officers at the Marcy Correctional Facility in Oneida County. And this was a case that really has shocked both the state and the nation. And it's primed the legislature to take a look at New York's prison systems in a sort of a different sense. I know you guys have been talking about public safety being a hot topic for this year. More than a dozen correctional officers were fired in the days following the incident, and Governor Hochul has already implemented a number of immediate changes, like expediting $400 million in funding to install fixed and body cameras at all Department of Corrections and Community Supervision facilities. While the AG's office was investigating Brooks' death, Letitia James handed that investigation off to the Onondaga County District Attorney, William Fitzpatrick, after discovering that four of those involved officers are already defendants in other legal matters being represented by attorneys in her office. I spoke with Republican Mary Beth Walsh of the 112th District up here, the 112th Assembly District, entering her fifth term, and she's defined herself as someone who's willing to work across political aisles. Seemingly all sorts of politicians are ready to rally behind. Taking a good hard look at the culture in our prisons in the state that have led to this type of tragedy.
Let's hear what Assemblywoman Mary Beth Walsh had to say. And we're going to play audio now from Mary Beth Walsh, the Republican Assemblywoman, talking about the situation at Marcy Correctional Facility. You're listening to special coverage on WAMC as we kick off the New York State legislative session.
But to see this as an isolated incident would be to completely ignore the reality of what's happening inside our corrections facilities. That when you look at the trend lines,
and that's actually Kerry Warner, the Democratic Assemblywoman from the 113th District, although making similar points as Mary Beth Walsh had. We've been joined by WAMC's Southern Adirondack Bureau Chief Aaron Shella Levine, and we're going to let you go, Aaron, and continue your great reporting. Thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you.
And you're listening to WAMC's Legislative Kickoff. We are going to go now to our Times Union colleague, Capitol reporter Raga Justin. Raga, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
So, as we've been asking everybody, how was the first day of session from your perspective? What did you hear down there?
Yeah, it was a busy day at the Capitol today, but I got to say, probably not a lot of substance. It was a big focus on affordability, that seemed to be the watchword, which was expected from what the governor has put out before. Obviously, lots of talk about the, you know, incoming Trump administration as well, but until we know exactly what's coming down from the federal level, it seems that lawmakers are keeping quiet about what exactly they think they can accomplish in New York.
Now, Raga, you did some reporting late last year about Governor Hochul signing the Climate Change Superfund Act. What other climate-related initiatives and bills do you think might get some attention in this session?
There's a couple. You know, there's two camps here. There's environmentalists and those who are more closely tied to industry, right? The environmentalists want, you know, these golden standard energy solutions, and others say that what's important here is a reliable energy source that's not going to fail at the 11th hour. But they both say that figuring out how to move forward on climate solutions without, you know, raising costs is a priority this year because, again, affordability is such a top concern. Figuring out cap and invest, which is essentially a carbon tax on fossil fuel producers, that's going to be important. I'm also hearing that developing these states' production of nuclear energy is being pretty seriously considered. Again, that's a more reliable energy source, although it's unpopular with those who are environmental justice advocates.
Raga, this is Lucas Willard. You've been doing some reporting work on healthcare issues in the run-up to the new session. What are some of the dynamics that you're following?
Yeah, you know, advocates hope, again, that the incoming Trump administration will sort of spur Democrats to go bolder. You know, there's policies like the New York Health Act, which would essentially provide universal health care, but that's an unlikely sell. But, you know, one big storyline from recent months that I think will absolutely be playing out in the legislature this year is the sort of uprising against the health insurance industry, right? Those spurred by the assassination of the United Healthcare CEO in Manhattan last month. That set off a big reckoning with how we have set up healthcare in America. And I would not be surprised if we see some legislation from Democrats who are attempting to untangle some of the knots that the hospitals and insurance companies have tied themselves into.
Raga, in addition to lawmakers returning to the Capitol today, we also had the glorious return of all the lobbyists. And I was curious, you've got an open door at the Capitol. Anyone try to bend your ear today? Was there any issues that people were particularly trying to chat you up about?
Not particularly, Dave. I think it was more so that the lobbyists were running away from me, but I was able to corner a couple of them. Yeah, I think it's again, some of the big storylines. People, again, aren't really getting into what exactly they think they are going to see this year because of so much that is still unknown, but energy is going to be big. I have a feeling that there's going to be some movement in the New York City transportation space, and that's about it.
As long as that's not during peak hours. Well, Raga, Justin, we're very grateful for your time. Thank you so much for joining us and keep up your great work working for the Times Union covering the New York State Capitol.
Thanks so much for having me on.
If you're just joining us, this is our special coverage of the kickoff of the New York State legislative session on WAMC. And we are here in the studio. I'm Ian Pickus with Lucas Willard and Dave Lombardo. And we're joined now by the New York State Assembly Minority Leader Will Barclay of the 120th District, a longtime guest on WAMC. It's great to see you in person. Thank you for being here.
Well, thanks for having me on. It's nice to be in person. I said, I think the last time I was here, I was interviewing with Dr. Shartok when I first became leader. So that was probably almost 5 years ago.
Well, we will try to uphold that standard. So in the meantime, what's on your to-do list for this assembly session?
Well, really, it's the same issues that the Republican Conference and the Assembly have been advocating for the last several years. I was interested hearing today, and we've heard with the governor leaks out her State of the State proposals, it's all about affordability. And we've recognized in our conference that it's expensive to live in New York State. And unfortunately, over the last several years, we've lost almost 650,000 people because they can no longer afford to live here. So we have to figure out, you know, what we're going to do to make New York more affordable. I always say when you're a hole, you got to stop digging. We can't continue to tax and spend in New York like we've been doing. So I would like to see some of the proposals that the governor's mentioned. I'm happy about. I'm always happy about giving money back to the taxpayers. We proposed the last several years for a child tax credit. I was pleased that she is now talking about a child tax credit. But ultimately, we can't continue the same trajectory that we've been on for the last decade or so. We can just expect the same results with people leaving New York.
I was watching your interview with our colleague Susan Arbetter, and if I'm not putting words in your mouth, you thought that the tax rebate checks that Governor Hochul has proposed is fine, but you don't see that as being a big picture solving of the issue that
you
laid out.
Right. I'm always for giving taxpayers back their money. It just seems a little backwards that we're taking their money and then giving it back, and we want to be rewarded for being good people to give it back. So I'd rather just see general tax cuts across the board. I think that will have a much bigger impact on the state.
Now, Assemblyman Barclay, your party made big gains on the national level this past November, but Republicans are still in the minority in New York. Nevertheless, how does the GOP conference feel moving into the new term?
Yeah, well, we would have obviously liked to pick up more seats on here, but I think one thing I feel very good about is, again, it's our priorities, what we think the president won on. You know, as I said, we're worried about affordability, we're worried about crime, we're worried about the migrant crisis. These are things that we've been hammering for the last several years, and it's nice, you know, to have some recognition, at least from affordability. Hearing it now, everybody's talking about it. But, I mean, we're all elected officials. We're not naive, and we know how people get elected. I think the Democrats are waking up to the fact that, holy smokes, Trump won this election basically talking on those issues. So I think I'm somewhat optimistic that maybe the majorities are going to recognize that if they don't, there'll be, you know, deal with these issues, there are going to be some serious, you know, electoral consequences, hopefully, in my opinion.
Well, following up on sort of the point that Lucas is making, though, because you're in the minority, you obviously can't set the direction, you can't steer votes on stuff, but you do seem to have power when it comes to setting the tone of debates in Albany. So when you think about how to use that rhetorical power, are there issues that you are particularly focused on, whether it's immigration or cost of living in New York, and how you're thinking about framing those issues?
Well, absolutely. I think we've had a lot of success over the years using the bully pulpit, particularly on crime. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've railed against so-called bail reform, raise the age, etc. And usually, you know, we try to be effective. We try to get law enforcement. We try to get prosecutors. We try to get victims of crime to come in and speak with us. I mean, everybody hears politicians talk, and I think it's sort of, you know, here's a lot of rhetoric, blah, blah, blah. But when you have
But not
people,
when you're here.
Yes, thank you very much.
Present company excluded, right. Obviously.
Yes, please. So when you have the real people out there on the front lines speaking, I think that's very powerful. And as a result, we've seen some pullback on bail reform. We've seen some addressing some of the criminal justice issues. So we're going to continue to do those types of things and make our voices heard, because that's what we have to do in order to get movement in New York.
I wanted to ask you about that, finding common ground with the majority party. You mentioned there have been some tweaks to the bail reform laws over the years. But obviously, you know, you've already said the A word, as we referred to it earlier today. Where can you find compromise with Democrats on the big issues like affordability?
Well, we're willing to reach across the aisle and do anything. Talk about affordability. Again, as I mentioned, the child tax care credit. That was a bill that got held in the Ways and Means Committee that we put forth. The governor's proposal is actually a richer proposal than what we're doing, but we would happily work with her in a bipartisan manner and make sure that we, as Republicans, agree with what she's proposing, and we would support something like that in the budget. So there's a whole host of issues. Interestingly, in my opening day speech today, I mentioned child tax credit. I also mentioned she's talked about a database for substitute teachers. By the way, we introduced that in 2023. That was held in the Assembly. We've talked about increasing capital for child care facilities, state capital on that. Interestingly enough, she's now proposing that in her state of the state. So there's a lot of issues out there that we've actually been advocating for years that I'm glad she's getting on board, and we look forward to working with her.
Well, those bills are held for consideration, so obviously they've just given them consideration and now they're ready to act.
Exactly.
The big fight in the budget every year is over school funding, with the legislature always coming up over the top of what the governor proposes, and they land somewhere in the middle. This year's debate is set against a report from the Rockefeller Institute, which was tasked by state lawmakers with evaluating how the bulk of school aid is distributed. One of their recommendations was phasing out this so-called hold harmless provision. As someone who's been around the block a time or two here in Albany, does that seem like it's a dead-on arrival here in Albany? Or do you think some version of that, which could end up lowering the amount of aid that some schools get, actually gets through a final budget?
Well, even in my own conference, there's, you know, big differences in what we want to do with school aid. Ever since I've been elected, it's my personal position, not the position of the conference, I've always thought we need to reform school aid where we're driving more aid towards low-wealth districts. Obviously, I represent a lot of low-wealth districts, so it's easy for me to say that. When you're taking aid from higher-wealth districts, as some people even in our conference represent, they don't like that. Not surprising. Their argument is, of course, we're paying more in, we ought to get, you know, what we pay in. So I do think there's probably some middle ground. I don't know if we get rid of hold harmless, you know, just directly, but maybe, even tweak that where it's sort of a semi-hold harmless. Maybe schools that are sort of on the edge, we keep them in a hold harmless, but really the wealthy schools have to do it. Ultimately, we can't continue on spending like we have with school aid. There's going to have to be some reform. I mean, I forget what the numbers are now off the top of my head, but the governor even mentioned that last year during her budget address, and she's mentioned how much money she's put into schools, which we support. We all want schools and education to be appropriately funded, but it's not an endless bucket, and somewhere along the line, there's got to be some reform to the system. We can't continue. I think what we've been doing the last 5 years is giving really, really substantial increases in aid to schools.
What do you think about the issue of cell phone use during the school day? Because we're expecting some sort of guidance on that shortly.
I hope they, personally, again, I think it's a great idea. You know, I've talked to parents.
To ban it?
To ban it, yeah. And I think you could go in, I think it could be relatively done relatively easy, where you just put your cell phone in, you know, a case or something as you go into the classroom, and you can collect it going out of the classroom. But I understand from the teachers I've talked to and some of the administrators, it's really a huge problem. It's a huge distraction. Unfortunately, it's very often the parents that don't like their kids to give up the cell phone. I think that's really where the pushback comes back. I think a lot of the school teachers and administrators are for that ban. But, you know, you're in school to learn. I think having your phones there, even when I'm doing stuff on the floor or whatever, I get distracted using my phone. If you're trying to listen to a lesson that you're maybe not overly interested, it's very easy to go to your phone and be distracted. So I think the ban can be implemented in a very reasonable way where you could provide communication to students, provide whether safety people are concerned about by losing their phones, but at the same time, not have that be a distraction in the classroom.
Governor Hochul says she wants to make it easier to hospitalize people who are experiencing a mental health crisis, and connecting that issue to the larger public safety issue, which has dominated the political discussion over the last few years. Do you agree that the state's mental health hygiene law, as is right now, should be changed?
So I'll be perfectly honest on that. I have not looked at that issue exactly. I saw the proposal. I saw it as her headlines of what she's saying to do. That very well may be a reasonable idea. I just don't want to opine on it because I haven't really studied that issue. I would say that we have to be careful of what, you know, it's just wholesale to say this is going to fix it. We certainly have a mental health issue in New York. I think a lot of the problems we've had with the subway crime and happening is a result of the problems with mental health. So we need to do something on that. But interestingly, I saw a story come out the other day that they're saying that increased marijuana use may be somewhat responsible for that. So there's a lot of factors that go into this. I think we have to keep an open mind of what's causing these problems and obviously try to address them, we can try to nail them down. The one thing I would agree with the governor and I agree with the Democrats, we do have a mental health crisis in New York, so we have to address that issue.
Let me ask you what Dr. C would call an honesty question back in the day. Given where Governor Hochul's poll numbers are right now and what happened in November, when you go to bed at night, are you thinking about what it might be like to have Governor Mike Lawler sworn in a couple years?
Well, yes, I think we all dream about that, don't we? But no, I think he's very serious about running. He was a member of our conference. I think he's has some great ideas of what will help New York. So we'll see. I think the governor, she's got problems, obviously, from Republicans, Mike Lawler, maybe others that will come out. I'm very optimistic we can get an A candidate to run this time. But she's got problems in her own party, and it's very likely that she may be seeing primaries, possibly even by her lieutenant governor. Who knows? So she's got a lot of election problems, and she doesn't improve her numbers. Those problems are just going to compound.
Yeah, how do you think that potential primary from her lieutenant governor in 2026 could inform the 2025 legislative session? We tried to get answers from Antonio Delgado today about what he was going to focus on, very tight-lipped, wouldn't share anything. But do you think this is going to be something sort of hovering over this entire session?
Well, I think they'll move her to the more moderate positions. But I think we're moving that way anyways. I think the strength of the socialist, the Democratic Socialist group, I think has waned. I don't think as many, you know, the far left is not as strong as it was. I do think there's a move. So what's causing it, whether it's her reelection and she's pushing that, or it's just the natural progression of how politics in New York has been going, particularly after this last national election, I guess I can't point to. But both probably will play a role with some moderation, I think, on policy that we've unfortunately seen some of the extreme policies passed, you know, over the last several years.
It won't necessarily be your fault, but if the budget is late, how late will it be?
Well, it's going to be on time. I talked to the governor today, and she said it's going to be an on-time budget. That's what she said. I said, I support that. So there you guys go.
Wow. Will Barclay brought some news to Studio A today.
I'm willing to take action on that if you really think you want to stick with that April 1st position.
So that's New York State Assembly Minority Leader Will Barclay of the 120th District joining us here at WAMC for our New York State Legislative Kickoff Session. We're very grateful for you coming uptown a little bit to join us, and we look forward to speaking with you a lot more as the session proceeds.
Terrific. Thanks for having me on.
And let us hear now from what the Senate Minority Leader Rob Ort said about his priorities for the upcoming session.
They are challenges that have existed now, either for several years, or there are challenges that have existed in front of the state in the past. And previous legislatures, previous governors, previous administrations have had to grapple with similar issues. And I believe I would say many times they have grappled with it and they have effectively addressed those issues. So now the question is, the challenges, like any legislature convening around the country today, every state legislature, our Congress, will we be able to step up and face and deal with the challenges facing us here in this body, in this state, in this moment?
That was New York State Senate Minority Leader Rob Ort outlining his priorities for the year. You are listening to WAMC's special New York State Legislative Session kickoff program, and we're going to head north now to Plattsburgh to check in with WAMC's North Country Bureau Chief Pat Bradley, who's been speaking with some New York State lawmakers about what they'd like to see this year. Hi, Pat.
Hi, Ian. Hi, Lucas.
Hi, Pat.
Hi, Dave.
What up, Pat?
Good afternoon.
So, Pat, obviously you've been chatting with a couple of people who have been in some national news articles of late based on the fact that there is likely to be a special election soon in the 21st House District. But first things first, the New York State Legislative Session, what have they been telling you?
Well, we have in this district up here, we have in the Assembly a Democrat and in the Senate a Republican, even though the district does tend to run rather Republican, does kind of depend on what area of the district you're in as to how Republican versus how Democrat it is. But they seem to agree, and it does seem to be the theme of the Assembly and the Senate this year, that affordability is going to be a big issue. D. Billy Jones has been working on a lot of things like agriculture, the economy and workforce development, infrastructure, recreation and tourism. Tourism is a big thing up here, but you have to have the infrastructure to be able to support that. Veterans and law enforcement, and that all ties into affordability. You know, can people pay the taxes to be able to support that? And more importantly, can municipalities pay for any unfunded mandates that come from the legislature?
Now, D. Billy Jones, of course, announced that he will not be a candidate for the special election I mentioned for Congress, but his Republican colleague Dan Steck of the 45th District is now running hard for it. Let's hear what Steck had to say about his priorities for this session.
People are very concerned about affordability. Outside of that, education, and it seems like that dominates a lot of the discussion. When Governor Hochul wanted to fundamentally change foundation aid and get rid of Hold Harmless, that hit the North Country particularly hard, rural school districts certainly hard. Half of my 48 districts would have lost money due to that change in formula. She backed off of that, but still on the table as far as for discussion. So, I'm sure that coming up, that's going to continue to be another issue. But then infrastructure, cell service, broadband, not sexy stuff. But, those are the things that affect all of us, and those are the things that I hear about from people.
Now, Pat, that was Senator Steck speaking. Steck is also running for Congress in the 21st District to succeed Elise Stefanik, who has been picked by President-elect Trump to be ambassador to the UN. With that race looming now, what are the contours of that race? How does it look different from a more typical congressional race, if you will?
Well, because whoever runs, if they're in the Assembly or the Senate, they don't have to give up their seat, so they don't lose anything if they run. So Dan Steck, you know, if he doesn't win, he goes back to the Senate. So nothing to lose there. But there's also the situation where this is a race that could affect the balance of power in Congress. And so it's already being scrutinized by some of the right and left at the national level. D. Billy Jones announced that he would not run in the race, which is putting Democrats into a scramble to find someone that they feel would be able to run strongly in the race, although Paula Collins is saying, hey, I can probably do it. I ran against Stefanik, and there's a couple other Democrats that are running. But I think people anticipate it's going to be possibly an nasty campaign. You know, we have sticker mule Anthony Constantino, who's one of the Republicans running, along with Steck, and Constantino, who is highly supportive of President-elect Donald Trump, pressing Steck's support of Trump and whether he supports Trump enough. Steck has said, you know, Constantino is stepping back to 2016 and he supports Trump, but Constantino is now pressing back saying, well, he hesitated back in 2016 when he shouldn't have, and Steck isn't conservative enough. So that's just a taste of what will be happening, I think, when this election actually gets off the ground.
And all of them are doing a bit of a shadow campaign right now to try to work the county party chairs who will decide the nominees. For whatever it's worth, Pat did interview the former North Country Congressman Bill Owens today, who's a WAMC commentator and is the only Democrat since the Civil War to represent that district in Congress. And he said that he thought Democrats had taken a big hit without D. Billy Jones possibly in the running. That's our North Country Bureau Chief, Pat Bradley in Plattsburgh, joining us. And Pat, we're very grateful for your time. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
We go now from Plattsburgh to Poughkeepsie on our special legislative session kickoff program. And WAMC's Hudson Valley Bureau Chief, Jesse King, joins us now. Hi, Jesse.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me.
Of course. So you've been talking to Democrats and Republicans alike. Let me guess. They mentioned affordability.
Yeah, I was going to say, actually, I should clarify or spoiler alert everyone that I'm about to mention so that they're focused on affordability. That is definitely the word of the day.
And what will be some of the key issues?
Well, I did speak with Republican State Senator Rob Rollison in the 39th District, and he actually went into detail about public safety, which is another one of the big key issues that has also been a word of the day. Rollison is a former police officer and former mayor of Poughkeepsie. He told me that he thinks the state went basically too far too fast, was what he said on bail reform in 2019, and too many offenses today are not bail eligible. He also says a lot of offenders today are young people, and so then, like, the raise the age laws mean those young people end up in family court, which he says isn't equipped to handle the course load it's getting. He cited the recent string of violent incidents in New York City subways, specifically, you know, a case where a man was arrested for two separate stabbings over the weekend.
Let's hear from Rollison now in his own words.
Why is an individual who is dealing with mental health issues, who's been arrested 87 times, on the street? No one can explain that to me other than the fact we're not doing enough to remove dangerous individuals from the street. I know the governor apparently is going to talk about this in her State of the State. I'm looking forward to that. But again, there's a lot of talk, but we need to have action and concrete steps to do these things. And we can by working together and not ignoring a situation where people do not feel safe.
And Jesse, you've also been speaking with Democrats in the Hudson Valley. What can you tell me about some of the Democratic priorities for the legislative session?
Yeah, so I spoke with Democratic State Senator Michelle Hinchey of the 41st District. She was actually part of a recent panel event for Hudson Valley Pattern for Progress, and she said she was looking for an assembly sponsor for her Safe Water Infrastructure Action Program bill, or SWAP, so I guess just, like, ignore the I in that acronym. But basically, SWAP would reallocate stagnant funding and clean water grants and give that money to upstate communities to update their water lines. And, you know, it would start as a pilot program worth about $100 million, but ultimately she sees it as an annual funding stream that would allow towns to maintain their pipes the same way they receive regular funding to upkeep their roads. And that ultimately, she said, could factor in affordability for municipalities at the end of the day.
Let's hear from Hinchy now.
We have thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of miles of water infrastructure. Many of it, some of it still is over 200 years old. Some of it is built with wood. So we have a lot of work to do, especially when we, just a few years ago, with the help of all of New Yorkers, we enshrined the right to clean air and clean water in our state constitution, the Environmental Bill of Rights Act.
That's State Senator Michelle Hinchy. Jesse, can you tell us also about some of the new faces who are coming to Albany from the Hudson Valley this year?
Yeah, you know, incumbents fared pretty well in November's election, but there are a few new faces in the assembly from the Hudson Valley. We've got Democrat Patrick Carroll, a former Clarkstown town councilor. He won the race for the 96th district, and that's a seat that former Assemblyman Ken Zebrowski vacated last year to take another job. In the 97th district, Democrat Aaron Wider defeated Republican incumbent John McGowan. And in the 100th district, Democrat Paula Kaye replaced former Assemblymember Aileen Gunther, who retired at the end of her term. So we do have some new faces in the assembly down here.
WAMC's Hudson Valley Bureau Chief Jesse King joining us from Poughkeepsie. Jesse, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
So the first day of session, the first special is more or less under our belt. Dave, we will be together hosting coverage on Tuesday of New York Governor Kathy Hochul's State of the State address for stations in the New York Public News Network. What are your expectations for Hochul's big speech on Tuesday? And what does she have to do in that speech to kind of, you know, win over New Yorkers and lawmakers?
Well, unfortunately, I don't think that speech is going to be the secret bullet that is going to win over the public and lawmakers. The governor is not very popular in New York State, and this speech, while you and I and Lucas and your listeners might devour it, the general public is not going to tune into this speech, might not even hear anything about it. Most people are just going to
prove us wrong, folks.
Yeah, most people are just going to consume maybe a little bit in the nightly news or maybe read a story the following day in the newspaper. But in this speech, the governor is going to try to lay out her vision for what affordability looks like, for what public safety looks like, for what opportunity looks like. And I'm more interested, I think, in some of the unfinished business from 2024. There were some bills that got close to the finish line, passed the state Senate, ultimately didn't move through the assembly. And one is a bill that has to do with a reduction of single-use plastic packaging, so-called extended producer responsibility. It moved through the Senate. The assembly, which got bogged down with some congestion pricing issues in the final hours of the session, couldn't move the bill, allegedly had the votes. I think that's going to be on the docket in 2025. And I'm really excited to see what that looks like, because it's a major issue. Another one that couldn't get across the finish line, but was something that the governor, the Senate, and the Assembly all supported, was updating the short-term disability benefit in New York. Basically, if you're out of work, what is the state going to pay you? The rate hasn't been increased in more than three decades. It's less than, I think, $200 a week. And that's another issue that moved through the Senate, was primed and ready to go in the Assembly in the final hours, but ultimately didn't come up for a vote. I think that is one of those things to watch that could get done either in the context of the budget or as a standalone bill, and it's something that would have a major impact on the lives of New Yorkers. And when we talk about affordability, that's one of those ways to say we're making New York more affordable, because you can afford to, you know, miss work and actually get money.
What about medical aid in dying, whatever you want to call it? That was another bill that had some momentum but didn't get over the line last time.
Yeah, so this is legislation that would allow terminally ill New Yorkers who are deemed mentally competent to basically have a healthcare professional's help in ending their own life. We spoke with the head of the Assembly Health Committee recently about her 2025 priorities, and we talked off the air a little bit about this, and she claims she's got the votes. But that was in 2024. There is a new set of members. She's going to be tallying up what that actually looks like. It's one thing to say you have the votes, though. It's another thing to actually get a bill to the floor for a vote. We've seen bills that have been hung up for years in both houses that allegedly have the support. Some of them even have a majority of sponsors that would suggest that they could pass. So I'll believe it when I see it when it comes to medical aid and dying, that it's going to become the law of New York. But just to see it get on a committee agenda would be a big thing in either house and a sign that it might actually move in 2025.
Dave Lombardo is the host of the Capitol Press Room, which you can hear on WCNY's stations and as a podcast. And Dave, we really appreciate you spending this hour with us as we kicked off the legislative session. Looking forward to the State of the State with you on Tuesday, and thank you so much for being here.
Anytime to spend time with you, Ian.
And that brings us to the end of our special broadcast today, kicking off the start of the 2025 New York State Legislative Session. Thanks to all of our guests, our engineers, and Capitol Press Room host David Lombardo for joining us in the studio for the entire hour.
Thanks also to Madeline Reynolds for helping us connect with today's guests, some of them a couple times. But most of all, thanks to you for listening as we get ready for a busy year in state politics.
And one programming reminder, in partnership with WMHT and other New York Public News Network stations, WAMC will offer special coverage of Governor Kathy Hochul's State of the State address Tuesday at 1 p.m.
For Lucas Willard and all of us here at WAMC, I'm Ian Pickus. Thank you for spending this time with us. It's 5 o'clock. Okay, that does it for this episode of the WAMC News Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time, I'm Ian Pickus.